Our first speaker is Chris Kiley. Chris is Director of Life Science Engineering at American Company with over 20 years of experience in HVAC design, commissioning, and construction administration of biocontainment labs. He graduated from Georgia Institute of Technology with a degree in mechanical engineering and currently works and lives in Duluth, Georgia. Please welcome Chris.
Thanks, Bob. Is this loud enough? I'm a quiet talker, so if I'm too quiet, let me know. So our first discussion this afternoon, after lunch, hope everyone had a good lunch, is on design strategies for elimination of airflow reversal in BSL-3 laboratories. And because I'm first, I get to do the learning objectives for everybody. So objective one is to describe the concept of pressure reversal, also known as airflow reversal in containment laboratories, and define where the pressure reversals are not allowed and where they are permitted. Second objective is to describe the NIH and CDC oversight of BSL-3 facilities. Objective three is to explain the difference between biocontainment facility commissioning and annual performance verification to understand distinction of ANSI Z9.14 and select agent rules as relate to performance verification. And the last one is to understand what options are available to simplify the design of biocontainment facility, HVAC, to reduce cost. So you'll see that on everybody's slide, but I don't think anyone else will skip over that. So lots of people I'd like to acknowledge for their input, including Benjamin Fonts at Yale University, Paul Langevin at American Company, Joe Tonelli at Public Health Canada, Jim Coogan with Siemens, and Scott and Jack for providing input to these slides as well. Our agenda this afternoon is going to be kind of a review or just go over definitions, a review of the guidelines, a discussion on design considerations, a couple of examples, and then conclusions. So first off, definitions. BSL is biosafety laboratory or biosafety levels. And there are four distinct biosafety levels appropriately named BSL-1 through BSL-4. The first two we aren't really going to deal with today. They deal with low or moderate risk agents that that pose some minimal risk based on what's being done with them in the lab. To the users, to the environment. The ones that we're going to focus on really are the BSL-3 agents, which are known potential for aerosol transmission and can cause serious or potentially lethal infections. So that's where our focus will be today. And a lot of the guidance comes from the BMBL, which is the Biosafety and Microbiological and Biomedical Laboratories, which is published by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, CDC, Centers for Disease Control, and NIH National Institutes of Health. So jumping right into the guidelines and where the concept for the no reversal came from, there was a fifth edition of the BMBL that was published released in 2007. And it changed some of the verbiage that was in the guidelines. It used to state that HVAC control systems should be designed to prevent sustained positive pressurization of the laboratory. And it kind of left everything up to an individual risk of a facility. But when the fifth edition was published, they stated that under failure conditions, the airflow within the lab will not be reversed. So that caused a lot of changes within the industry. Also along those same lines, NIH generates their own design requirements manual, which is used for internal NIH laboratories as well as laboratories that are getting NIH funding. And they published their guide in 2008. And when they did, the criteria from the NIH was that a lab does not go positive for more than 30 seconds. Subsequent to the issuance of the guidance, they revised that in 2009 So that the language matches what's in the fifth edition of the BMBL, that under failure conditions, airflow will not be reversed. And if we look at some of the other guidelines that are out there, the Health Canada guidelines, which was published in 2004 and just recently issued again in 2013, they have acceptance criteria that sustained reversal of airflow is to be prevented. So it does allow for some level of reversal of airflow. And if you, a lot of this comes from the biosafety world, where no matter what's going on in the lab, anytime you leave a lab through an open door, you're pulling air with you. So there is some level when you're exiting a lab that you're actually pulling air with you. And then if we look at the WHO or the World Health Organization Biosafety Manual, it has the same language from the fourth edition of the BMBL, which is to prevent sustained positive pressurization of the laboratory. There was a lot of confusion as to what was meant by failure scenarios within a lab and what had to be tested. It was written in the guideline, it could be open-ended and interpreted as anything. Following lots of comments, the CDC published on their website what is meant by a failure and when the no reversal of airflow comes into context. And there are three scenarios. The first one is a mechanical failure of an exhaust fan or fan components. So if you lose an exhaust fan, does the lab go into a static or steady state condition where it's not being positive, and that's one of the things they're looking for. It's also looking at power failure of the facility, so what happens when you lose power within the lab itself. And then what happens, and the third one is what happens when you come back from a power outage condition to normal power. And those apply to whether you have a generator or not within your facility. They went on to provide additional clarification that air that originates within the ABSL-3 or BSL-3 laboratory does not travel outside of the containment boundary, and the containment boundary is also inclusive of the anteroom that's associated with the laboratory. So it can flow from the lab to the anteroom, but not out into a common corridor. And also that a positive pressure excursion is not necessarily an airflow reversal. If you do have a positive pressure blip within a lab or containment boundary itself, you can do further testing using either smoke sticks or dry ice to verify that you're not actually having air leave the laboratory. So if we jump into some of the design issues, a lot of it has to do with coordination of all the various groups involved, including other design staff, electrical, structural, architectural, and lab planning, working with your commissioning agent to help define what the criteria is, but also working with the users and the biosafety professionals, as well as the operations and maintenance group within a facility. And because none of that group can agree on a direction forward or what they really want, they all want something different. It's good to design a system that's flexible in how it operates, whether it's different levels of air change rates, different temperature, different humidity levels that you can control. Of course, when you do that, all of that comes at a cost. But one of the key things is that last bullet point is to define that performance criteria up front so that everybody knows what the overall intent of the facility, and there is a goal, an end goal to achieve that performance. So designing particular room control systems, there are three general types of room controls that we look at. The first one is offset airflow control, which is, if you work with any of the controls vendors, this is the easiest for them to control. It's more simple in how it operates. And it's just pulling more exhaust than you have supply to maintain that negative pressure in a space. Second one that I want to talk about is the differential pressure control, which is using differential pressure sensors within a lab or a containment boundary itself, and referencing that to either an adjacent space or a common reference point, and controlling generally a supply air valve to maintain pressure in a room. One of the keys that you always find out here too is people entering and exit the lab, they will set off the pressure alarms if you don't disable them through door contact. So it's good also to interface the controls with the security components as well. And then there's a kind of a hybrid option where you can do offset airflow control and you're just maintaining the higher exhaust rate than you are supply. But you're using the differential pressure to reset the amount of offset. So if the room pressure starts to drift out of range, you can adjust the offset to try to keep the lab itself operational. This also allows you some level of flexibility in that if you keep moving outside of a specified range and you can no longer maintain that pressure within a space, that you can actually just go ahead and shut down the room itself and go to a static or an isolated condition. So it does give you some measure of control and interim steps to take before you actually lose a lab. Now, as they relate to no reversal under failure conditions, some of the keys to keep in mind is to have interlocks at the system and device level. Typically, these are hardwire interlocks. These are not software interlocks because it takes a while for the communication to occur across the network. So one of the keys would be to look at the hardwire interlocks. To have fast-acting controls, and typically this is for actuators or the airflow devices themselves, is to have fast-acting actuators. You find a lot of the actuators for a standard VAV box would be 90-second stroke rate. What we're looking here is generally somewhere in the order of 3 seconds. And then it is for a facility to maintain operations and to keep it up and running, especially if you have animals, is consideration of using emergency power as well. So if we look at offset airflow versus differential pressure, these curves were generated based on Equation and ASHRAE's applications handbook, and they really apply to a pressure difference within a stairwell so that you don't have too much pressure across the door and trying to exit a stair. But they apply to the laboratory environment itself. And it just has to do with the leakage area and the different offset airflows and what that does to differential pressure. And the curves that are generated, the five curves there, are really based on a known leakage rate within a laboratory. So these were set up at varying degrees of leaks through a door, an entry door into a lab. So typically you would have a crack area around a door and a crack area underneath a door as well. So we looked at different configurations of doors, crack areas, and what effect that has to the pressure and the airflow. So typically we'd find a lab at 0.05 inches of pressure differential between spaces. And this is not a requirement from the BMBL guidelines, but I think USDA is the only one that really publishes what that differential pressure should be. And they define it as 0.05 inches. So that's typically what we look at. And before somebody enters a lab, you'll look at the pressure gauge on a wall to make sure that your flow is moving in the correct direction. And 0.05 inches really allows for some tolerance of devices as well. So you can see, depending on what the actual leakage area is within a lab, and these are big differences whether you have a gasketed door or the contractor just put the door in a little bit differently for each lab, that to achieve the 0.05 inches can range, in this case, anywhere from 60 to over 200 CFM. And that's a big part of that is why we build in some flexibility in the lab and why we are designing air handling units and systems that handle much more than a design value, because each space is different, and it has to be tweaked generally by, and Dan will talk about that, I'm sure, as part of the commissioning process as well. And conversely, we see the same occurrence, what happens to the pressure in the space. So if we had 100 CFM, and typically in a lab you'll see between 100 and 150 CFM of offset airflow, depending on the overall leakage into the space, it has a pretty drastic effect on what the pressure is that you'll be reading. And these are pressure readings that you'll be reading before you enter a space. So if you look at the lower two ones, they'll say it's not safe to enter the space when you're still getting the offset airflow that you're trying to achieve. So a lot of it's tweaking of systems after the putting, because not everything is put in the same way. So what do we mean by engineered leaks? So there are several ways to do that. Typically, and I'm going to use typically a lot because not every lab is the same. I'll use generally too. They're all a little different. They all have little quirks. But usually you would seal all the penetrations that go into a lab so that you can control the amount of air that's going in them, and you can control the pressure that it creates, the pressure difference between those labs and adjacent spaces. So some of the common ways of doing that are through adjustable door seals, backdraft dampers through the wall, adjustable openings through the wall as well, so you can actually dial in a pressure that you're trying to achieve. And in some cases, this is more based on risk, is whether or not you need a filtered bypass as well. So as I said, these rooms are really, really tight, and sometimes things happen. So it's important that, again, back to those fast-acting controls, because for example, most exhaust fan systems, because they have HEPA filters associated with them, they tend to be in the 8 to 10-inch pressure difference range, which is a lot of pressure for a room to handle. And you see on several occasions where we pull ceilings down, or in one case we made kind of a jacuzzi toilet inadvertently. So one of the things that we do to get around this is also you can have pressure relief components within the ductwork itself, so the room doesn't see this level of pressure. You can also rely on the hardwire interlocks that are installed. So there's lots of ways to get around this. Sometimes you find out too late. One of the other things to consider during the design phase really is how are you going to control the individual room. These are tight rooms. In general, and there are three typical types of airflow control devices, usually a single blade damper, a Venturi valve, or a bladder valve. I've been to several places where they say it has to be a specific type of valve because that's the only one that works. Nothing else works. I can tell you that they all work, and they all don't work in some cases. I've had them all fail for different reasons, and I've had them all be successful within a lab environment. So it's important to look at the overall operating condition of a lab when you're selecting the right devices. And just as an example, we had a lab recently that was, or a facility that was 150 labs. And they had, it was 3AG, which is a USDA designation similar to a BSL-4, It has double HEPA filters and series on the exhaust, so there's a big pressure difference that occurs. This lab also happened to have redundant filters, so every room had two parallel filters that were both in series. So we were seeing some huge pressure drops. But they also wanted to be able to take down certain labs within the building for maintenance or just take them down as unoccupied. And if you do that and you keep some of the other labs open and you have one of the redundant valves or one of the redundant dampers down for maintenance, then you're seeing larger pressures, and some of the other rooms have to compensate for those. So the pressure range for the Venturi devices couldn't accommodate this. So it's a good valve for the most part, but in some cases, in that particular case, it was not a good application. So it's important to look at all of your operating scenarios. And one of the big keys in designing these facilities is developing the correct sequence of operations. And it's not the normal startup, normal operation, shutdown that has to be defined. It also includes all of the interlocks, the different operational modes, which can be occupied, unoccupied, decontamination mode if they're doing gaseous decon. That has an effect of the operation of the room. What are the different failure modes? Equipment loading, which could be biosafety cabinets within a space as well. Those have a tremendous effect on the overall operation, especially if they're either thimble or directly connected cabinets. Is there a maintenance mode? Do they want to keep take one lab down for maintenance while keeping the adjacent spaces operating? That's going to have a huge impact on the sequence and how the system is to be operated. And that's a big part of why you need to coordinate with all those folks ahead of time, biosafety, the O&M groups, and the users themselves. And then lastly, it's really beneficial to develop a pass-fail criteria for the overall operational lab and what the sequences are supposed to achieve, and that's not just a qualitative description, it's also a quantitative description as well. And it could be quantitative in the sense of defining what the room tightness needs to be. So we'll look at a couple of examples. This first one is a couple of labs in the Midwest. These are BSL-3 labs, and I believe these were set up with blade-type dampers in an offset airflow control condition. They were set up with standard actuators, so they had the 90-second stroke rate actuators. And when testing was done, and I'm going to try to move the mouse. That works okay. So when testing was done, it was done with power failure and then a return to normal power. And this is the zero pressure line here. And you can see both during power failure and during a return to normal power that they had positive spikes, and further testing indicated they were getting airflow outside of the lab. It took some time, and they went through some modifications. It changed over to the 3-second actuators for the air valves. There's also quite a bit of loop tuning that needed to be done as well. Loop tuning is not always making it faster. Sometimes it's slowing down the reaction time. We've had some cases where the control system will react, you'll start to lose pressure, it'll start to go positive, and it'll slam a valve in one direction. And then you'll see that as an error, and it'll start slamming it in the other direction, it'll just oscillate back and forth. So loop tuning is not just making it faster reacting. It's truly an effort to try to tune the overall intent of the controls. So after all of that was finished, we went through the same testing scenario with power failures, and then back to return to normal power. And in both cases, the lab stayed below that neutral pressure point. They went to a static condition, which is what we want to see. So the next one that we wanted to look at was a small BSL-3 lab that had an associated anteroom. And this has a couple of things. These pink triangles here are the pressure trends from the building automation system. And they were set up in, I believe, 2-minute intervals. And then the blue line is the same pressure difference points, but it's reading at 2-second intervals. So just because you have the BAS system doesn't mean you're going to pick up all of the issues. So the BAS system never saw these positive pressure spikes. In this case, this was bladder valves on the supply and exhaust with active pressure control of the supply valve. So what we saw here was, again, positive pressure spikes during failure conditions. This was a loss of power, and this was coming back online. But in this case, since we are, in this instance, we're measuring between the BSL-3 lab and the anteroom, this does not necessarily fail because it's still within the containment boundary. If we were measuring outside of this containment boundary, outside of the corridor, then this would be considered a fail. And since this was active pressure control, it's active pressure control because the room was so tight. So that door was so tight. When they did the testing to verify that is any airflow actually leaving that anteroom, there was no airflow. So this actually passed. So wrapping up, it's not unusual to have positive pressure blips. It does take, these are not facilities that you just turn a key and turn it on and it goes and it's ready to go. It takes a long time to actually tweak the systems to respond to what it's supposed to be doing. Speed of response for BAS is critical to help minimize or eliminate positive pressure spikes. And that can be, a lot of times we'll actually do dedicated control panels to either rooms or suites. And so that you avoid a lot of the network traffic that goes on. And exhaust fan failure spikes, those are the ones that happen quite a lot, and those can be difficult to get rid of because there are HEPA filters associated with these in the exhaust. Static pressure is so much higher than the supply that the inertia really shuts down that exhaust system much quicker. And again, pressure excursions do not necessarily mean an airflow reversal. Just because you have a pressure excursion doesn't mean you failed. In a well-designed and qualified commissioning process, which Dan will talk about in a little bit, can maintain negative pressures during fan failures. And some of the keys to that are the fast BAS communications, the hardwired interlocks, fast reacting devices, and fine tuning of the programs. I think that's it.
We have time for a quick question or two for Chris. Anybody? You're off the hook.
Almost off the hook.
Come on up to the mic, please.
Engineered reversal airflow devices that you have, you showed three types. Who makes those and where do you find those? And I've sort of struggled with that a little bit.
Well, you can work with the architects on a lot of it's through the doors, so you can have adjustable door bottoms for flows. The backdraft dampers, I don't see a whole lot of them in the U.S. There's a European company that makes those. That work pretty well. The ones in the U.S. are really for larger flow applications as opposed to the 100, 150 CFM that we'll see. but there is one manufacturer that I know of that does it, and that's they do mostly that in Europe. And then the kind of the dial-in ones are actually ones that we developed. It's just PVC pipe that you can with the little thing that you dial in and it adjusts the opening. And then the filtered bypass, you can work with any of the filter manufacturers to do one, a housing through the wall.
There's a consultant in the Northeast. He pushed at his university. He uses a lot of he proposes or pushes for backdraft dampers between the ante room and lab. And we've tried that, but we are not very successful. I'm an engineer with the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and we have a number of different flavors, all kinds and shapes of BSL-3s. Four of them are CDC Select Labs. And matter of fact, that's what I was doing Friday in order to prepare for a CDC inspection in 2 weeks. So I'd be curious, maybe I can talk to you or who else provides that manufacturer.
Sure, I'd be happy to provide the information. The only one I found that deals with the lower flows is actually a European manufacturer.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Chris.